Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and today we are going to dedicate this podcast to a discussion of the latest admissions scandal, which is taking place in the undergraduate domain. But we wonder, we're kind of curious around the office at Clear Admit, whether this has ramifications, you know, for the MBA admissions process. And so we're going to dig deep into what this scandal was about and talk about how it may or may not apply in the MBA admissions domain. And I have a special guest today. I'd like to introduce you all to Scott Shrum. Some of you may know Scott. He's actually the author of Your MBA Game Plan, one of the best-selling books on kind of MBA admissions strategy. He's also a board member at AGAC, which is an association for graduate admissions consultants. And he is the former president and COO of Veritas Prep, one of the leading GMAT and other test prep providers, as well as an admissions consulting firm. So, Scott, welcome. You are in Los Angeles. So welcome to the podcast. I'd love to know how great the weather is out there. I'm sure it's better than it is here.
Thanks, Graham. Yeah, it is. It's actually, this week is beautiful after weeks and weeks of chilliness and rain, which I know most of the world doesn't take pity on us, but it's finally cleared up now.
Okay, and I guess, you know, LA needs the rain, so it's probably always a good thing to get
Yeah,
some
it was it was actually welcomed, yeah.
Yes. So thanks for making time. I'm sure I've probably forgotten other, you know, feathers in your cap here. I mean, one of the things I did want to mention to our listeners is that you've got an MBA from Kellogg at Northwestern. And so I think, you know, just having you on to discuss this as someone who's been, you know, on the front lines of kind of the coaching industry and test prep, as well as, you know, you've traveled through the admissions process yourself at a couple of really great schools for both undergrad and grad. So I just thought you'd be the perfect person to talk with. And obviously your role within AGAC, the association, kind of a governing body for admissions consulting. So you're the perfect guest. And I wanted to, just kind of get you to talk about this. I guess one of the things that I thought we could start with is, I want to make sure that our users and listeners, you know, on the podcast understand, like, what is admissions consulting and test prep? Because those are, you know, subjects that have come up a lot in the media of late. As we know, there's been this undergraduate admission scandal where people were kind of cheating the system, and you know, we'll get into how they did it. But I think, given your background, I'd just love for you to kind of explain a little bit about you know, how you kind of define what is admissions consulting and test prep, because it's going to be relevant as we move on here.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'll start with test prep because I think it's a little closer to what just about everybody is familiar with. You know, if anybody's ever worked with a tutor or gone to a office hours for a TA and asked for focused help on a given subject or in preparing for a test, that's along the lines of what test prep is. You know, everything that's come out in the last few weeks with the scandal, is sort of, I've read a lot of articles where everything that, admissions consultants and, test preparation players do, everything must be bad. You know, they're painted with a really kind of broad, nasty brush. But in most cases, in probably 99% of cases, test preparation players are legitimate. They're helping somebody who, has test anxiety or, they simply can't handle working quickly enough to excel in one of these exams. Veritas Prep had its got its start doing GMAT preparation, which has traditionally been the dominant test for MBA admissions. And everything that we've ever said about the test is what we truly believe, which is that test in particular is a test of higher order thinking. And that's always the way we tried to train our students for the test, not, you know, so-called tips and tricks and not shortcuts, but, hey, there's a way to attack these problems. And by the way, what you need to do to attack these problems, those are the same kind of skills that schools actually really care about and ultimately that employers care about, the ability to synthesize information, the ability to take a lot of information and pluck out the one or two things that matter or to find patterns. And that's often what test preparation companies and tutors do.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, with respect to test prep, I often find that for a lot of people, it's like a way to force you into preparing for the test. You know, it's kind of a regimented way to kind of make sure that you are, you know, doing homework. And I found that was useful even for when I took the test. I just wasn't studying on my own. I then signed up for a class and it kind of just put me on a schedule to get ready for the test, because these tests, you have to prepare for them. It's not something you can just walk in cold on.
That's so true. In fact, in my old role, I remember one time we surveyed our students and asked them what was their primary driver for signing up for a test prep course. And it was the second or third most popular answer was just to get on a schedule and force me to do it. You know, it's like hiring a personal trainer. And it's true. It's like, I don't have the motivation and I sure as heck don't know where to begin. So can you just lead me through it? That's a big part of the value that they add.
So moving on to admissions consulting, how would you define that? I mean, I guess maybe in similar terms on some levels.
Yeah, it is similar. I think the one place where admissions consulting gets a little more specialized compared to test prep is it really has to start with the applicant. You know, like, what are you about? What are the decisions you've made up to this point? What are the decisions that you see yourself making in the future? And where do you see yourself going? Okay. Now, I, as an admissions consultant, can help you try to translate those things into the common language of admissions that admissions officers tend to look for in applications. They can stop applicants from applying to the wrong schools or, you know, we've all seen an applicant trot out an essay where it starts off with some grandiose quote from Gandhi and then the rest of the essay has nothing to do with that. And they think they're being brilliant and their friends are patting them on the back. We're saying, hey, look, you're making a big mistake. This is not what they want to see. This is not unique, and it's certainly not sharing anything about you. You might want to reconsider. I think schools sometimes get uncomfortable when they hear this, but the process is confusing, and a lot of schools have the right attitude about trying to clarify the process and just bring more transparency to it, which is great. I think more transparency is always going to help. But I think good admissions consultants help do that translating between what schools want and what applicants have inside of them and just need it brought out of them.
That's a great point. So let's dig into this scandal. So there's, as many of our listeners know, there's been this, I think it, you know, really came to light because of the nature of the parents involved in the scandal, many of whom were kind of Hollywood or, you know, kind of elite executives who were basically trying to get their kids into top schools. And I mean, we've heard, you know, I guess, what is it? Stanford, Georgetown, Yale, USC. I mean, there's a Wake Forest, that the list of schools is pretty impressive. I mean, it's kind of a who's who of the top schools. And the parents involved, you know, are a lot of them famous Hollywood folks. So, but what was going on there? I mean, basically it sounds like these individuals engaged with an admissions consulting firm. And maybe, I don't know if the firm did test prep too, but talk me through a little bit about what you understand happened.
Yeah, it sounds like they were, on the surface, they were hiring this admissions expert. But whether they went in knowing that it would be this or quickly the conversation turned this way, it quickly jumped outside the bounds of what admissions consultants typically do. And they started discussing side doors or back doors or whatever. This guy, the guy who was orchestrating the whole thing, Rick Singer, he had some of his common catchphrases. And ultimately, it just boiled down to he had connections either in the test administration space, so some of the proctors who administered the SAT or ACT, and he had connections at some schools, such as Stanford or USC, and he had them, they were on the take. He would pay them to make room for a kid or claim, oh, yes, this kid's going to be on my soccer team, so they're going to get preferential admissions treatment. Or they would pay off a test prep proctor so that somebody could come in, pretend to take the SAT or ACT. In some cases, allegedly, the kid even thought he actually completed the real SAT. He leaves the room, then the proctor gets to work and cleaning up the answers to deliver a certain score. So, I mean, this went so far outside the bounds of what a legitimate admissions consultant does that it just pains me anytime I hear him described as an admissions consultant, because I don't think that's what he was.
Yeah, because I, you know, as you know, Clear Admit used to do admissions consulting back in the day, and I too was involved in AGAC, and, you know, one of the things that we always worried about were, you know, our schools, just making sure that schools were comfortable with the type of advice that was being given, and also just ensuring them that, like, candidates weren't signing up for an admissions consultant to basically buy essays, you know, to have someone write their essays, or, you know, because that was always the kind of fear that schools had. And there were, you know, there's evidence of that happening in certain markets in the world. And so, yeah, so that, you know, this, when I read this story, that was what really jumped out at me, this idea that, like, wait a second, this isn't like some college admissions consulting guy writing people's essays and, you know, just like getting them answers to SAT questions or something, you know, that are maybe, you know, ahead of schedule or something so that they have a larger bank of questions to work from as they practice.
I mean, yeah. Those are all small timey scams, yeah, right? Those yeah, are, that's yeah, nothing compared yeah to this.
And I also love, maybe walk me through, we're going to jump around here a little bit, but you know, this guy, Rick Singer, who ran the company, he talked about admissions having kind of a front door, a back door, and a side door. And I'd never heard this kind of, you know, analogy, but he, you know, basically talked about how like the front door is you just apply and you're kind of Joe Schmo applicant. And the back door is the, oh, your parents gave lots of money to the school over the years, or you're an alum, you know, it's in your family, and there's a building named after your grandfather. And so you have this kind of preferential, quote, treatment. But he talked about what you were just kind of alluding to, the side door, I guess, where he was, walk me through this. He was basically paying, how did he get people to get, do you know how he did this? I mean, was he sort of just handing a check to somebody at the school saying, hey, tell everyone that this guy's on the swim team, or?
I don't actually know how he came to know every one of these people, but I know there was a third entity involved, which, I mean, it was really, like, just amazing. This is one of those guys where if he had just focused on something legitimate, you know, he could be the next Steve Jobs or something. Just 'cause he had developed this nonprofit, and so a Lori Loughlin or Felicity Huffman, or, you know, those happen to be the two names everybody knows. They would, he would name his price. They would make a donation, as I understand, to this nonprofit. So now, you know, you've already sorted the blur, the money lines and the money flows. They get to write that off because it's a donation to a nonprofit. Then that nonprofit would have reason to pay out, to, that administrator at USC or, coach at Stanford or Georgetown, they would, you know, there'd be something, you know, fees earned for some sort of service that they provided for the nonprofit, and then they would get a six-figure check or a five-figure check. That's how I understand it was happening. And yeah, that side door was, you know, the back door that I talk about, just, you know, hey, you're rich and you know, your parents donate a lot of money and you get into school. That's been around forever. And you know, in a lot of ways that bugs me, but it just seems like as a society, no one gets too fussed about that. But the side door just basically attempted to just subvert the entire process and just, it kind of ignored the traditional process and just practically just parachute the kid into a dorm room, without regard to any of the rules.
And what's interesting to me about the side door is that, and this is probably going to ultimately in the long run be helpful for the schools that are implicated in this, is that it's kind of a rogue actor within the institution that's sneaking someone in, rather than, you know, an admissions dean sort of like putting someone on the list who shouldn't be. And I, you know, I guess, I mean, for the record, my view on this sort of backdoor stuff is I have a couple of, I mean, I worked in admissions at Wharton for a time, as many of our listeners know. And, you know, there were kids who would, you know, maybe their parents went to Wharton or they're kind of have some affiliation to UPenn or, you know, donations, whatever it might be. But in all honesty, those kids, all that would happen is that their file would be marked as something that we called SI internally, so it's, which stands for special interest. And really all that meant was that they went through the process like everybody else, but the director of admissions would, you know, take a careful look before any final decision was made. And so what I would argue is that if the person wasn't qualified, like they weren't getting in. It was more like if they were on the fence that, you know, maybe in certain circumstances they would get the benefit of the doubt, or most importantly, if they were going to be rejected, the alum in question, the guy who built the building on campus, would get a call to sort of say, you know what, like, look, we looked at this file. It's just that they don't meet the basic standards that we have here, and there's not really anything we can do. But I wanted to give you a personal call and a heads up that this is coming down the pipeline because we really value your contribution to the school and we know you're a supporter. So I agree with you. Society doesn't seem to get too up in arms about this backdoor. And I think sometimes the media tries to make more of that backdoor than there really is. Like I think there isn't a case where people are just getting in who are completely unqualified. I think that probably used to happen more, and we may see instances of that in our, you know, some of our current leadership, where people may have gotten in places they wouldn't have ordinarily. But I feel like that's not happening as much. But the side door is really dangerous to me, because it's sort of like, okay, the soccer coach at, you know, school X is sort of like labeling a candidate as something that they are not. And that's in thanks to Rick Singer and his Photoshop expertise. I guess they were apparently Photoshopping the faces of people, of the candidates, onto people, you know, playing water polo or something, and giving, creating a whole kind of fake backstory about the person's illustrious career. So, just crazy stuff. So I guess, you know, the million-dollar question here, is, you know, could this happen, in the NBA admissions world? Like, do you think, that this is happening on some levels, or, you know, is there a side door when it comes to getting into Harvard Business School or Stanford or any of the top MBA programs?
I think it's very unlikely that that's happening. I think there's very much a backdoor along the lines of what you were just describing, Graham, where, and I think that that is more legitimate than not, but it's, I'm just acknowledging that it's there. You know, it just like in so many other things in life, it still does matter who you know. But with the side door, I think there's a couple of things. One, of course, there's no... so many of the Rick Singer cases involved athletic departments, right? And that's a whole other discussion about, you know, how some really just top brand name institutions still allow certain departments to do an end run around the traditional admissions process. I think that needs to be looked at, scandal or not. But you know, that's also a multi-billion dollar business. So, but so you don't have academics, right, being a kind of an additional pipeline into the classes. I think the fact that the classes tend to be so much smaller makes it harder. You know what I mean? If it's a university where your incoming freshman class is 2,500 students or 4,000 students, you know, quote unquote, hiding five kids who aren't supposed to be there is pretty, you know, that's pretty doable. But trying to hide a few people in a class of 400, say, I think it just gets harder. Some of the other stuff to think about is they do have, even though college admissions is really hard, there's a lot. I mean, these kids have to go through so much when they apply. Business schools tend to have more data points on their applicants because you've got the test scores. Of course, they have all the undergraduate transcripts, and then they also have all this working world data from their CVs and from their letters of recommendation, which are extremely important in the MBA admissions world, and the in-person interview. A lot of undergraduate schools still don't do do interviews, whereas most top business schools do. They at least do something online. And when you add all that up, it just becomes that much harder for these things to hide. I'm not saying I think it's airtight, and I'm certainly not making a declaration. Mark my words, it'll never happen in the NBA admission space. You know, then they'll say, you know, let's go back to March 26, 2019, when Scott Shrum said this would never happen. I think it could happen, and I think you got to be vigilant. I think it's exponentially harder in this space.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the fact that there are no sports teams or no formal, you know, NCAA type stuff happening, you know, and we know that's, as you correctly point out, and it's very timely, we're in the midst of March Madness. You know, sports is a big business for undergraduate, and so that's an issue that I absolutely think needs to be tackled at some point. But I think, yeah, on the NBA side, no sports teams. The other things that I want to call folks' attention to is just the level of security around the GMAT exam. So, you know, we talk about the sports teams being a side door that was, you know, manipulated by Rick Singer. But I think, if I understand correctly, a lot of these SAT, ACT tests are taken in high schools, proctored on paper, and they basically bribe the proctors to allow some of this nefarious activity to take place. I don't know if you know the history, but, you know, GMAC, who owns the GMAT exam, they had a bit of trouble back in the day. There were some security issues, particularly in Yeah, in markets that were, you know, just not as advanced, they couldn't really deal with, you know, kind of identity checks, you know, making sure that the person taking the test is. And so that actually, my understanding is that that is what led to GMAC awarding the contract to administer the test to Pearson. They used to work with ETS, and they switched it to Pearson because Pearson apparently had this newer technology involving, I believe, what they use is palm scanning, which is basically like almost like a retinal scan. So you can't really cheat in terms of sending someone else in to take the test for you. And they, I guess they also, because it's a computer-based exam, it's not like you can sort of, the proctor doesn't, they're just sort of there to observe. They can't really like set the computer to give you an extra 30 minutes or something, you know? So I think that's another piece that makes this a little more, you know, less, well, makes it less likely to happen, in the MBA domain.
Yeah. That one that happened in the, it was like the mid late 90s that happened, to the GMAT, that really rocked their world and kind of woke them up. And, yeah, that's, and not that long after, that's when ETS lost the business, right? And Pearson started administering them on computers, and then GMAT has gotten even more sophisticated now. There's palm scans, to verify your identity. You are not allowed to carry anything into the testing center. If you even during a break just go to your locker and look at your phone, your score will be canceled. I mean, they've become a lot more paranoid now, as they should be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, yeah, it makes sense. And they're, you know, they're administering a test all over the world. It's a truly international exam. So in any event, I think, you know, the side door isn't yet there in on the MBA side of things. I do want to kind of explore a little bit. We touched on it, but I'm fascinated by the motives of people involved in this scandal. So I totally agree with you that like Rick Singer probably could have made a lot of money doing something legitimate. I mean, he seems like obviously a good salesman, probably a pretty bright guy. It's just that it's amazing the stuff people do to line their own pockets. So I kind of can sort of understand his motive. I'm a little more puzzled by the folks like you're working at Stanford and you're a coach, which, I mean, it's a prestigious institution. Is it really like, I don't know. I'm a little baffled by the fact that someone will take like 10 grand or 20 grand, to sort of, you know, fake an athlete. I mean, because at minimum, you probably care about your sports team. I mean, if you're a sports coach, you like sports, you want your team to do well. And so I guess you're kind of using up a slot that could be, you know, and so that puzzles me a little bit. And I'm sure these people who are out on their butts, you know, in terms of their losing their jobs are wishing they hadn't taken the money. But the one that truly puzzles me is the parents. Like, I don't know if you've given any thought to this, but what do you think, I mean, what drives the parents in this case?
You know, I have a feeling that their defense, if we ever get to see their day in court, their defense is going to lean heavily on, oh, I just wanted what was right for my kid, and the pressures of the process just drove us to do these things that now we realize are wrong. I don't buy any of that, to be perfectly honest with you. I fully believe it's mostly ego-driven on the part of the parents. That's truly what I believe. And particularly, that whole and I live, Graham mentioned, I live, quote unquote, in LA. I actually live in the suburbs. I'm not cool enough to live in LA, but I see enough of the type. And it's not all, I'm not picking on LA. You can, you know, in any metropolitan city, there's this sort of this, particularly in cities, there's this keeping up with the Joneses and, you know, the pride of being able to slap for some reason in around LA, slapping a USC sticker on your car is a lot of currency. And, I add on to the fact that you even hear the way some of these parents described, their own children, they sounded like they didn't have much faith in their kids. Not, oh my God, I love him, but I'm, you know, he seizes up on tests. It's more of like, you know, he's too stupid. We have to do this for him. And, that on top of, well, you know, you're going to get into USC or Stanford, you know, I'm practically want to disown you. I think that's mostly what it was. And Rick Singer, as much as a crook as he is, I think he sniffed that out. He keyed right in on that. I think he exactly got what was going on, and he figured out how to strike that note They responded to it. I think that was it more than anything. Ego, and I can't believe, you know, the Joneses next door, their kid is going to Berkeley and our kid can't even get into any of the UCs. Well, I'm not going to stand for this. Let's call Rick Singer. I think it's that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think we're, you know, we live in an era of competitive parenting. I mean, you and I kind of see this because we have younger kids. Our kids are not yet applying to college, but we're, yeah, so we live in that. I see it all the time. You know, it's, and I think, yeah, for me, it's a lot of it was probably about being able to tell people at the cocktail party that your kid's going to school X and comparing notes with, you know, the other families. And I have to say, one of the things that's, I mean, first of all, this Felicity Huffman, I don't want to, you know, I think everyone, one thing that's interesting is, you know, there are like at least 50 people guilty in this or who've been charged or whatever. So I think the celebrity names get the most, you know, attention, but I will say this feels like a move right out of Desperate Housewives. I mean, it's like, you know, this is like the exact kind of thing that you would expect, you know, to happen on the show or something. It's kind of, but I think it, what's sad to me is that, I mean, and maybe I'm out on a limb here, but I would assume that, you know, Felicity Huffman and her husband, William H. Macy, I mean, they're probably bright individuals. They've been in a lot of great movies. They've interacted with a lot of smart people in their lives. And so, you know, I would assume that they have every means to kind of create the sort of environment for their kids that would allow them to be smart and get into these schools on their own, you know, kind of on their own merit. And so that's what's so sad to me is that, like, it's not like, you know, these are families that, like, there's no way they're getting in because, you know, the kids didn't grow up in the right sort of environment or don't have access to the right education or something. I mean, you know, it seems to me that these kids probably all went to really nice private schools in LA and, or wherever they were based, right? And so that's what's sad to me is that this is like a case of like, well, you didn't parent right, and now you're going to make up for it by just sort of spending your way out of it. And, you know, I don't know. That's what's kind of sad to me. And like you said, the way that they talked about their own kids, like, I can't even imagine hearing that as a child, hearing your parents say something like that.
It's so painful. Yeah. And I really don't think that the parents can claim any sort of ignorance. Like, oh, well, we just didn't understand the admissions process. I mean, I know, and I'm going to do it again. I'm just going to pick on the celebrities that, you know, are household names. But I know Felicity Huffman went to private boarding school and later went to NYU. You know what I mean? I mean, this is not, these aren't people who grew up on the wrong side of the tracks and lucked into some money. I mean, these are people who've had every advantage, and which is, you know, that I don't, you know, I'm not going to create some populist uprising. You know, they want to give their kids an advantage. I'm not going to complain about that. But then they just completely just decided to just write their own rules. It's hard to have any sympathy for them.
Yeah. And I think, it's been challenging because I think you're absolutely right. What's going to happen is this, when this all comes to trial or whatever, they're going to claim that, oh, it's the system's fault, right? They're going to say, we're actors, we're not, you know, education experts. And so we relied on Rick Singer to help us figure out this process and we didn't know, or, you know, and they're going to blame the system. Oh, it's too competitive. And I think, you know, on some levels, there are problems in the system. Like, I think it's wrong that kids have, you know, 5 activities a week and are kind of, you know, when they're in utero, they're already plotting their college admissions strategy or something, you know, but I think that, what's a shame is that I feel like some of the op-eds you read and some of the coverage of this is sort of basically saying, well, these parents did whatever it took to give their kids an edge, just in the same way that New York parent is paying for their kid to take a test prep course and to have an admissions consultant. And I really beg to differ there, because you start to get into it feels like a slippery slope to me, because then you could start to say, well, this kid grew up in this town and therefore they have an advantage because the school system's better there. Or, you know, and I also think on some levels, admissions takes that stuff into account already, you know? So I don't know. It seems like a slippery slope, but it's frustrating to see some of these op-eds. And I don't know, have you had any interaction with the other board members of AGAC, the governing body for admissions consulting in the grad school domain? Have you heard what's kind of being said around there? And what are your thoughts on, yeah, what is AGAC's kind of reaction to this?
Probably there, you could put it into two buckets. And the first bucket is just disappointment and resentment. I'd stop short of anger, but along the lines of what I was saying earlier about how so many articles say admissions consultant Rick Singer, and we're like, oh, please don't use those words, admissions consultant. This was a criminal masquerading as an admissions consultant. So that's one. And the second bucket, which is related, is a little bit of worry of, oh no, is this going to start a new cycle of, along the lines of what you were just saying, Graham, that slippery slope of, see, the whole thing is crooked, and then private admissions consultants are part of the problem, and we need to get rid of them, or, you know, we need to just blow up the admission system. And, you know, ACAC has done a lot in the graduate admission space to forge better, you know, kind of open lines of communication between the schools and the admissions consultants to improve that transparency that I was discussing earlier. And whether it's on the undergrad side or the graduate side, I would hate to see if some fallout from this scandal is that those lines of communication close down again, or admissions consultants, the legitimate ones, start to be looked at more skeptically again. Because there's not just ACAC, there's IECA, and NACAC, you know, these organizations are, you know, the undergrad spaces, there's so many of them, but there's so many legitimate, smart, caring private admissions counselors who, you know, a lot of them exist because the schools don't, or, you know, probably more accurately can't provide enough of these resources to kids, which is really too bad. You've got a lot of really capable and really caring people who come in and fill that vacuum. And it'd be a shame if they all get painted with the Rick Singer brush.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has been challenging. And I think even, you know, even ClearAdmit, our you know, our listeners to the podcast and users of the website are, you know, they're trying to figure out the best way to, you know, put their best foot forward in the admissions process. And I would hate for that, you know, sort of information and people kind of educating themselves and trying to do the best they can to be lumped in with something like this, which is, as you say, you know, this guy is not an admission consultant. He's just a criminal. You know, it's pretty straightforward. So I got to ask you before I let you go, I got to ask you, you know, we're kind of on the cusp of baseball season. I know you're a big fan. You're a Yankees fan, so I'm curious to know, like, what's your prediction for the coming season? Who do you have winning the American League or the series? Have you thought about this yet?
Oh boy, yeah. Oh, I've been thinking about it. Like a lot of Yankees fans, I'm, you know, I want every free agent who becomes available. So I was a little bummed that I didn't get Bryce Harper. Congrats to the Phillies on landing Harper. That was the longest courtship of all time. But, you know, I think the Yankees are going to be good this year. They're not coming out of spring injury-free. They've already got their ace, Luis Severino's hurt. And they just signed Aaron Hicks, their center fielder, to a 7-year extension. Now he's on the shelf with a bad back. And they had to hurry up and sign Gio Gonzalez. So I'm feeling a little, even though this is not an old team at all, I feel like they're limping into April. I think they're good. I don't know that they did enough to catch the Red Sox. And I think a little bit the Yankees strategy is hoping the Red Sox kind of fall back to the pack a little bit, which isn't really an amazing strategy. So I don't know. I have a feeling they'll come in second in the AL East again. But then, you know, once they're in the playoffs in October, who knows? I like this team, but I don't feel like they really brought it across the finish line in the off season.
Well, we'll see. You have to root for a kind of a World Series hangover for the Red Sox, and yeah, get into the postseason, and that's that. So, as you know, I mean, ClearAdmit and you know, we're based in Philly, so we tend to be Phillies fans, so we're excited for the season. On another kind of sports related note, and actually more relevant to what we just were discussing in terms of this scandal, ClearAdmit's running a kind of bracket challenge. So as many of you know, the NCAA tournament's taking place right now, which is the college basketball tournament. And ClearAdmit has a kind of business school bracket going on the site where we've kind of pitted schools against each other. You get to vote, and we move them on to the next round. And I think we're announcing the Sweet 16 today because it's following the actual tournament in terms of the timing. So encourage you to check that out. It's been fun. Our team's had a lot of fun putting that together. And and the folks on the site are getting a kick out of it. So, so I really appreciate, so check it out. And I really appreciate you making time, Scott, to come on. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you and talk about all things MBA admissions. And I encourage anybody listening to this, if you are thinking of applying to business school, check out Scott's book. I know you wrote it a long time ago, but I think that a lot of the advice in there is still really relevant. And I don't know if you guys have done a kind of a reissue of it or a whatever you call it in the publishing industry where you kind of a revised edition. But that book I really thought was incredibly innovative. It's called Your MBA Game Plan. And I think, I don't know if you would agree, but I just feel like there's still some really good lessons in there for MBA applicants.
Oh, thanks, Graham. Yeah, we the back third of the book was all really school-specific advice with essays, and just because of the nature of the, you know, the prevalence of the internet now, and the schools change their essays so often, I think that kind of that section of the book became less valuable. But the front two thirds, I think every word of it still stands.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So check out Scott's book. And yeah, thanks again for making time. And stay tuned, everyone. To the extent that you can rate and review this podcast on iTunes, we would be incredibly appreciative. And I've promised to read out reviews on the podcast here. I'm going to do that on the next episode. So again, thanks for tuning in, everyone. And we'll see you next time on the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. Thanks again, Scott.
Thanks, Graham.